You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Hello and welcome to episode 130 of Making Tracks, brought to you by those fine folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name's Mark, I'm one of your co-hosts, and joining me this week is a man who is very soon going to be leaving this golden shores and heading over to the United States of America, Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
I'm very well, and I'm hoping they'll let me back at some point.
Ha! You see, I have control over customs and imports, so, you know, as long as you bring me back another quacky monkey lizard from Galaxy's Edge.
I can't promise that. I'll maybe get a quirky monkey lizard, but I can't promise a quacky one, but I'll do my very best.
Hey, as long as you bring me back a postcard, I'll be happy, dude.
I can do that.
So how's things with you? Have you had a fun and busy week, as always?
Yeah, it's been a good one. It's been busy. Like you say, I'm off on my hollybobs, so getting ready for that. And obviously the real world stuff of making sure the house is tidy, because it's always nice coming back to a tidy house.
Absolutely.
And staying on top of the writing and making sure there's enough content set up for Fantha whilst I'm away. So even though I know I'm going to do a few bits when I'm there, because I'm taking my laptop and I'm not telling anyone. I don't plan on doing too much. How about you?
Lots of bits and bobs going on, floating around and stuff like that. Kind of still trying to pull my life back together after last week's LFCC and the collection room's in a bit of a disarray because there's things everywhere, you know. I had to move a massive Razor Crest box out of the way just so I could put the laptop on the table so we could do a podcast. It's just one of those things. So before you go away, do you do anything in your collection room? Because for instance, before I go away for like more than a couple of days, I always take a video record of the collection. You know, in the unlikely and unfortunate chances that something happens, I don't know, an asteroid kind of like demolishes the house or whatever, I've got some kind of record for insurance purposes and stuff. Do you do that or do you just kind of go, see you in a couple of weeks, bye?
I'm very lucky because my poltergeist used to be a librarian, so I can leave the room and it's pristine. I'm very, very fortunate. Not everyone gets a poltergeist that used to be a librarian. I mean, I haven't filmed the room for a while and things have changed around. You know, it's what it's like with collection rooms. They're sort of an organic thing, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you've got a Razor Crest to fit in there now and I've got all sorts of little odds and sods. And generally, it's sort of regular ongoing things like new comics come from Automatic or new figures come from All the Cool Stuff or whatever it may be, you know, new insiders turn up or whatever. I'm just looking around and at stuff that's here, books going on the shelves and such. But then, like I say, every now and again, you get something that's a little bit more off the wall. I'll give you an example, and I don't know where I'm going to put this yet, but I did get, do you remember last year they did a set of Star Wars candles? It was in a long black box.
Scented ones? I've got a box of those.
Right. Well, I hadn't got a box. I saw it on eBay.
Yeah.
I think it was like something daft like £7 for the box.
Yeah.
Somebody had bought it, never used it.
Yeah.
Won the auction. It turned up, opened up the box, and whew, as you know, because you've got it, I mean, there's this Cantina in there, yeah. X-Wing cockpit, Bantha Mill, Wookiee, and Trash Compactor.
Yeah.
All very unique smell. I think Wookiee's my favourite. I had a feeling that Rio was right. I was really impressed with that. But where am I going to put it?
Yeah. So mine's got a slightly funny story. Now, there is, I believe, I don't know, I've not seen a Return of the Jedi version, but I'm pretty sure there is a Empire Strikes Back version as well.
Yeah.
So, and I'm like you, I've only got A New Hope, so I must pick up those other two at some point. I brought those candles for Christmas a few years back, and she kind of opened them up, took one deep inhalation, almost threw up, and was like, yeah, you can keep those in your collection room. So it's like, sweet. You know, the ruse worked.
It worked.
But yeah, I mean, it is one of those things because thinking, actually, that'd be quite nice. If I kept them, it would probably make the room smell quite nice. But then I was thinking, well, I wonder how long that would last for. So I don't know. It's like the same as like I said last week, I've got that Mandalorian collector set. And it's like, that's just out there. At the moment, there's two cartons of like action figures on top of it. And it's just like, oh, you know, it's display space. And that's a heartbreaking thing. Trying not to kick the mail shipping box for the Razor Crest. But it's what it comes down to. And I think that's probably one reason why I've got quite a few Gentle Giant mini busts, because you can kind of squeeze those in just about most places. spaces. Even saying that, I think I struggled the last time I brought one to find space for that. So it's an ongoing problem that I'm glad we have, but God, I wish I'd have more space. So is that what you had this week, candles, or have you had any other stuff?
I have had some other stuff. I've had two things from Insight Editions, which are really cute. I've got this burgeoning mini library, and by that I mean small books.
Yeah.
Really nice. And they've sent two through the mini book of lightsabers, which is Dan Wallace again. And it's a truncated, very small version of that lightsaber book that came out last year.
Yeah.
About 3 inches high, about 3/4 of an inch deep. Hardback. It's absolutely gorgeous. I love these little books. And then another one, which is even smaller. It's maybe just over an inch wide. And that's the Tiny Book of Legendary Women, all done in purple with Leia on the cover.
Nice.
That's really, you have to really be careful with that because that is a tiny book. And they've done a couple. They've done the Little Book of Jedi, Little Book of Sith. Perfect stocking fillers. You'd have to be careful. You could lose that in the wrapping paper.
Well, that's it, so isn't that's, it? Yeah.
And then I also got the little golden book, The Story of the Faithful Wookiee, which is the animated segment from the holiday special.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So that is beautiful, and that's hardback as well. What about you?
Yeah, I've received my Grief Karga credit chip, 6-inch figure from Hasbro. And I think I said actually probably a few episodes back, I received the Armourer, and I was like, I can't even remember ordering it. And I was like, I didn't think I just ordered the one. I would have thought I ordered the whole kind of wave. So they seem to be kind of like coming out dribs and drabs. So that arrived. You hear that?
What's that?
So this is basically, actually, it's a little kind of like Tupperware box that a good friend and droid builder sent me, Nick Harbour. He's very kindly printed me the top Greeblies for a mouse droid, an MSC mouse droid. So long story short, I basically brought off of Lee Towsey a 80%, so slightly scaled down mouse droid shell, and it's kind of sat around and it's not done. I've not done anything, and I was just like, you know what, it's time to get it finished. So that's going to be a little kind of ongoing project that I'm going to be doing over the next 3 or 4 weeks. I've got the circuit boards for the side, so that's all good to go. I literally just need to then find a remote controlled car that will fit inside of, and basically get somebody to print the wheels and try and get the accurate wheels from the USA. So that is my little project. So this has all come. He's resin printed it rather than 3D printing. And actually resin printing, if for those who don't know, it is better in some respects than the quality you get from 3D printing. You don't have to do quite so much sanding and stuff, and you can literally almost kind of print full statues and stuff like that. I've seen the work that some people have done, you know, they've sculpted all different types of things, and you know, using a resin printer is basically almost what you'd get from Gentle Giant. I mean, obviously you can paint it yourself and stuff like that, so it's quite fantastic. A lot of people are using it for printing the Holochess characters and stuff for their big Holochess boards that a lot of people seem to be building at the moment.
I'm Brian Herring, BB-8 puppeteer, and you're listening to Fanthatracks. That'll learn you.
3rd of March 2012 saw the passing of Ralph McQuarrie, legendary Star Wars concept artist, left such a hole in Star Wars that's never really been filled. His work has continued to inspire artists that have come in all the projects since, be they live action, animated, big screen. When you think of Ralph and look at the work that he did, what are your sort of initial thoughts about Ralph McQuarrie 10 years, unbelievably, 10 years since he passed away?
Yeah, actually, when I saw the article, I was like, wow, has it actually been 10 years? It's just crazy, isn't it? And in those 10 years, we're still seeing parts of Ralph's designs and stuff pop up in various different guises in the new Star Wars productions. So it's really nice that his legacy is living on. Ralph is one of the few people there from, like, you know, very early on, who really kind of shaped the look and feel of Star Wars and the galaxy that we now kind of enjoy. One of the photos you've got on the Fanthatracks article is that classic photo of C-3PO and R2. And, you know, I can always remember Anthony Daniels talking at great length about, if it wasn't for that photo, you know, how he kind of connected with that character, he probably wouldn't have played C-3PO and we would have had somebody else do it. So it's amazing, isn't it? Just how many different ways Ralph has inspired both film and TV creators for Star Wars, but also just fans and everybody alike. I think it's fantastic.
It's hard to quantify, isn't it? The involvement that he's had with all of Star Wars, you know, and he is, I think I said in the article, I referred to him as one of the pillars of Star Wars, you know, obviously Lucas and Williams and Kurtz, and, you know, there's a handful of others that are absolutely key to Star Wars having the foundation to build off, because Star Wars could have been a great single film, and it would have still been a film I think we'd still be very fond of now if they'd never done another one, if it had been a one-off film.
Yeah.
And there's many one-off, E.T.'s a one-off film where people love it. You know, there's many one-off films. But I think with that grounding to build up off of, that you could move on to Empire, and I did sort of sequentially put those pictures in. You mentioned R2 and 3PO looking very, very different, but the next picture of the Tusken Raiders near to the wreckage of the engine, which was completely, totally used as inspiration for that scene in Book of
Boba Fett. Absolutely, yeah. Have you got the Star Wars art of Ralph McQuarrie? I'm talking about the 21.5 pounds coffee table book. Did you ever pick that up?
Yes.
You have?
Well, I don't pick it up often because I like my back how it is, but yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah. If people haven't had a chance to get that, it's well worth it. I mean, there's just so much amazingly in-depth kind of artwork in there. And also Ralph's other art, his concept drawings from just like the industry that he came from before. And I think it's like essential reading, and it's definitely one for a coffee table. You know, obviously you're going to need a massive coffee table, but hey, it's worth it.
You're right. Yeah, he worked for Boeing before, worked for NASA, did work on E.T., Close Encounters, Star Trek, the motion picture, Discovery. It is basically based on Quarry's design. He worked on Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar, yeah.
You know, all sorts of other work. And some of his last work, he did some of the box art for the Micro Machines range.
Yes.
Special edition era. So some of his artwork, people don't realise, is even on those. Just amazing. He was a master of his craft as well, and very giving of his time and talent. Obviously, our friend Paul Bateman sat under that particular learning tree, and has done as much as he can to nurture and respect the memory of what Ralph did. Anybody with a shred of knowledge of Star Wars knows that McQuarrie laid down that template. So 10 years on, unbelievable. Can't believe it's 10 years, but 10 years since Ralph McQuarrie passed. Tip of the hat to Ralph.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebraelios, and you're listening to Fanthatrax. Carabast. May the Force be with you.
Alan Ladd has passed away. He was the man who took a chance on Star Wars when other studios decided to pass. Decided that George Lucas was definitely worth taking a bet on, and basically nurtured the original Star Wars through 20th Century Fox into its production period and out into massive success on the big screen. He produced many other films, including the Oscar winner Braveheart, but nurtured so many other filmmakers to great success whilst he was working at Fox, Alien, Blade Runner, Omen, all the other great films. Great innings, no doubt, but another sad loss, isn't it?
Yeah, very sad loss. And if it wasn't for Ladd, he kind of really championed George Lucas and the early drafts of Star Wars, we probably would not be sat here talking about Star Wars on a weekly basis. Whilst we're grateful for that, you've got to tip your hat to the fact that it was, you know, having the experience and the knowledge to make that call and really push George and Matt to bring people back to the cinema, get those cues and stuff like that. And really, let's be fair, with Star Wars, you couldn't have asked for a better film, really, to kickstart that blockbuster era of filmmaking in America.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Easy Rider, and I've been writing an article for another publication recently about another great film that came out in the early 70s. Easy Rider made so much money that they had the money they could share out to other smaller projects to let small filmmakers go and do their own films. And Doug Trumbull, who did the visual effects for 2001 and ended up directing Silent Running, he was one of those recipients of that money. And George Lucas making American Graffiti was another. And it says, you know, Laddie saw Graffiti, was intrigued and wanted to work with George. And of course, George has this idea for a Flash Gordon-style space fantasy thing. And what I'm really trying to say is you need these people to see beyond the business end of it and sort of see the kernel of a great idea and let it flourish. Because how many record labels turned down the Beatles until EMI went, let's give them a go? Just need that kind of guy like Laddie was to sort of go, this could be the one.
That's the thing. It is always a bit of a gamble. You know, on one hand, you could have something that is just going to tank and gobble up all your budget and you're going to end up with like $11 million in the hole. Or you end up with a Star Wars, or you end up with a Game of Thrones or something like that. And I think it's such a fine, innate skill that also you probably could be a bit of a gambler, let's be fair. At the end of the day, he did it with Star Wars and he's done it with so many other films as well. So Alan Ladd Jr.'s legacy will always live on as long as Star Wars lives on.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fanthatrax fan.
A project that we thought and assumed had either been torpedoed or pushed right back was Rogue Squadron, originally announced to be directed by Patty Jenkins and come out on the 22nd of December 2023. With her leaving the film, we just assumed it wasn't going to happen. Now, in a 25th of February document, we can see there's a whole list of movies coming out in 2023. Unbelievably, on the 22nd of December, there it is. Rogue Squadron is still on the list. Do you think they could turn it around? Now, with effects technology moving forward and everything else being in place, do you think it's possible that they could turn Rogue Squadron around and get it out for Christmas next year?
Yeah, absolutely. The risk is obviously rushing things just to meet a release date. But actually, at this point, barring obviously what the shareholders may or may not want, but from like us fans, if it gets pushed to May 2024 or something like that, then fine. You know, it's, if there's no impact on us, obviously the only impact is on the Disney returns and the box office. And did they literally park Rogue Squadron, or did they continue developing it and doing pre-production work in between that time when they did kind of announce that, you know, she's stepping away from project? I'm a little bit nervous about it in respects that, well, what are we likely to get? But then it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, I suppose it also depends on the story. You know, just because it's Star Wars, we've seen like with Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, it doesn't need to be massive epic battles and stuff like that for it to resonate with people. I'd say it's pushing it a bit, but if anybody can do it, it's like Lucasfilm and those guys at ILM can definitely do it.
I've not heard anything since Patty Jenkins was announced as stepping away. And of course, she has since stepped away from other projects, the Cleopatra project.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the dominoes are lining up again. I don't know. If it is, then it's very much on the down low. But your question, could it happen? Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you know, we've entered a new technological age now with stagecraft. ILM have not just got ILM in San Francisco, but they've got, you know, five offices, exactly. Essentially five campuses around the world now. So ILM isn't just a central West Coast American thing. It's a global project now. And also important to mention, and I'm assuming it'll be the same with Indy 5 and with Willow on Disney Plus, Star Wars now doesn't just use Industrial Light and Magic. There's other visual effects companies working on Star Wars.
Well, I mean, yeah. Even all the Star Wars films in the last, you know, from 2015 onwards, so they haven't all been exclusively ILM. ILM will tend to do the bulk of, I suppose you'd say, like the real heavy work. But like you look at the credits, there's so many VFX houses that get used on Star Wars and all these films. You know, there's like VFX vendors all over the world. That's just part of the parcel, because what they do is they will sometimes farm out work to VFX houses which have a specialty in a certain type of effect.
From what you say, then you think if they divide up the work correctly, if they're at a point where the script is where they want it to be, all the pieces are in place, it's possible, isn't it? It's doable.
They would need to be getting in front of a camera, I would probably say, within the next couple of months.
Yeah.
And that is assuming that it all goes to plan and there's no delays. And, you know, for whatever reason, we've had pandemics. We've had actors get doors dropped on them and everything else. And, you know, there's always a risk that there's going to be delays for unforeseen stuff. And it ultimately will come down to the story. You know, as long as the story is well defined, you know, they're not going into shooting with like a half-baked idea and hope that by the time they finish filming they're going to have multiple rewrites and it's all going to kind of fit in and then just going to try and bolt it all together in the edit suite, then I think we'll be all right. As fans, we've gone past that, we've grown beyond that. We don't need Star Wars immediately, we just need good Star Wars. So if it means it takes a little extra time, 6 months or a year or something, then I'm more than happy to wait for it.
Totally agree with that. It has happened before, certainly in the UK. We have had Indiana Jones and Star Wars films out in the same year. 2008, we had Crystal Skull and the animated Clone Wars movie.
That's right.
Here in the UK in 84, we had Temple of Doom and we had Caravan of the Courage at the cinema. So it's happened before. But in terms of two big tentpole blockbuster Indiana Jones and Star Wars movies, this would be a first. That's not happened before. So that's quite an enticing thought that we'd have a really Lucasfilm heavy summer, not to mention whatever's coming on Disney Plus in 2023. You're thinking Mando season 4, hopefully, maybe Book of Boba season 2, Andor season 2. You know, we don't know what else is lined up for that year yet, but that would be incredible just for me and for you doing what you do with the Legion, the thought of being at a premiere again.
Oh, that'd be, it's so exciting, but we never kind of assume that we're going to be there. It's always a lovely kind of thing to be invited by Lucasfilm, and it's normally in recognition of the work that we've done as kind of like a thank you, but you know, we don't expect it. Hopefully it'd be great, because it'd be great to see 70 or 80 cleared X-Wing pilots in Elstree Base, and I should know because I actually run the squadron. But yeah, so you know, there's plenty of orange flight suits to be found and stuff, so if they do want us at the premiere, we'll be there. But also, isn't 2023, especially December, isn't that also, you know, if Star Wars comes out, then aren't we going to be going head to head with Trek? Where does your allegiance lie, Mr. Newbold? Put your cards on the table.
They're out on the table. I adore Star Trek, as you know. Yeah. And if I had the chance to, you know, if they put the press screenings on different days, I'd be at both. But if I could only choose one, it's going to be Rogue Squadron.
You know, we hadn't heard any news really, had we, about any announcements? When we're talking about announcements at Celebration, whether or not, you know, we were going to hear anything. And even then we were talking about, are we going to get a film announcement? And I think that it's now probably going to be even more on the cards if this is correct. And hopefully we might see some kind of future programming panel or something, or even a Rogue Squadron panel. What do you reckon? How fantastic would that be? Come May, that they announce the cast of Rogue Squadron at Celebration.
Oh man, that would make all the sense, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would make all the sense. And also it would show tremendous clout they can announce in May, not just the cast in the sense of here's the people you're going to see coming up next year, because we had that with Obi-Wan last year. You know, we knew who was in Obi-Wan and we're not getting it till May. So that's not unique in that sense. But because we won't be the only ones talking about this on Making Tracks, there'll be other podcasts talking about it elsewhere. Really? Do they think they can turn a Star Wars film around that quick when you're so used to a film taking 3 years? You know, we've got Attack of the Clones 20th anniversary this year, and you think back to when Phantom Menace came out in the May and they start filming Clones the following summer of 2000, and it's not out till 2002. You know, they had to work so far ahead. And even then, we were in the digital age. That was shot on digital film. You know, it was as high-tech early days compared to what we've got now, of course, but beyond high-tech for the time. And even then, it still took 3 years to do it. Of course, you know, Rogue Squadron should have been further ahead than it was because various factors meant that Patty Jenkins couldn't direct it, which put it all back and so on and so forth. But if they can announce something at Celebration, which again is only sort of 80 days away, yeah, that'd be something else. Like, that'd be a roof raiser. It would definitely get people excited.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So we have a listener's question. It's from Tony at Imperial Command, and his question is, "Hi guys, hope you're enjoying playing with your Razor Crest, you lucky buggers. I'd like your take on this opinion from the workplace. Many argue that Star Wars works better on television than it does in the movies. Discuss."
Oh, so, God.
Very relevant to what we've just been talking about. Do you think Star Wars is working better on television than in the movies? What do you think?
Oh, that is a tough question. In some respects, we had a sequel trilogy, and then we had Star Wars TV. So we've never really had properly Star Wars TV, like live action, at the same time as we've had the films being released. It is kind of hard. I kind of, in some respects, see maybe what he's getting at, because in some respects, one of the initial things that George Lucas always really wanted to do was to have an episodic serial matinee in the cinema. Yeah. And obviously at the time, even then, you know, it was only ever really going to be in cinema because you'd never get Star Wars to look even like a tenth of how it did on TV. And now we're at the point whereby we're kind of getting episodic Star Wars on TV. I think, other than obviously Rogue Squadron, it has gone very quiet on the film front. They've wrapped up the Skywalker saga, but then where does it go from there? And, you know, I think Lucasfilm have been writing to maybe take the time to explore where it could go and maybe even see using series on Disney Plus, maybe where things could resonate with audiences. What's your thoughts? It's a big, tough question.
And I think something you just said there makes me think, when Lucas released that first book and the first few novels that came out, there was always that little thing at the beginning that said characters and situations created by George Lucas. And when you think of the Skywalker saga, obviously it's both. It's the characters, but in the bigger sense, the situation that they're in.
Yeah.
But I think also those situations are so big, you know, the rebellion and the Death Star's destruction and all the death of Jabba the Hutt and all the other things you want to pick out from those movies. They are huge events that affect billions. So I don't know where they're going to set Rogue Squadron. I'd like to think they're going to set it in the OT, because then there's the options to see moments that we've seen before from other angles. For example, Hawkeye just did it brilliantly. He went back into the Battle of New York and you saw Hawkeye do the things he did, but it was within the broader picture of all the other stuff we saw in that movie. And Lucasfilm and ILM and all the other effects houses have the capacity and the capability to do something like that. Rogue Squadron, for example, as a movie, could show you, if it wanted to, the Battle of Hoth from the point of view of one of the other Snowspeeder pilots. Say Rogue Squadron comes out December next year and it's a massive hit, and Lucasfilm and Disney go, well, actually, we're not going to do a Rogue Squadron 2. We're going to do a Rogue Squadron TV series. And then all of a sudden, you're in the midst of the Galactic Civil War. You don't have to follow Han, Luke, and Leia. It's everybody else doing the nuts and bolts stuff, and Rogue Squadron's part of that. You go to the Battle of Endor at the end of season one of Rogue Squadron TV series, and you're flying through the Battle of Endor, and oh, there's the Falcon. Oh, you know, there's the Mon Cal cruiser getting destroyed by the Death Star. Exactly. And it's all there, and you're in it, and it couldn't be more Star Wars, or it couldn't be more Return of the Jedi. You're not flying with those guys, but you're in that situation, and I think that's the scope they've got. So to your point, what's better, movies or TV series? In a sense, if you want to deep dive a situation, television. If you want to deep dive a character, movie, because there's so much more going on around the broader story of, pick a battle, Battle of Endor or Battle of Scarif. Maybe we'll get to see some of Scarif in Andor at some point. Yeah. You can explore so much more in a TV show. And what you said about Lucas and the Republic serials, the whole Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers thing, completely pertinent. on a crazy level because it's a bit like Star Trek. Star Trek for a while had Next Gen on television and DS9 and Voyager on television. And then Next Gen goes to the movies and the movies and the television kind of hopscotched over each other for a good long while. But you were never in any doubt that you were watching television when you were watching DS9 and Voyager, and you were watching movies when you were watching First Contact and Insurrection. You get to modern visual effects levels now, and you know you could throw any of those Book of Boba Fett episodes up on the big screen. You wouldn't have gone, well, that's a TV show. Whereas if you were showing a Trek episode from 30 years ago, yeah, you'd go, well, that's a TV show. So we've moved beyond the delineation. But I don't know. It is a tricky one. I think it's the story. I think the story dictates where the story is told.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you do make a good point. I mean, the one thing that I think Marvel so far, and obviously, again, because Disney Plus is still pretty young, I think the one thing that Marvel hasn't really done, at least to me anyway, I've never really felt, you know, the TV shows were that important to the films. And in fairness, like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you'd only get like a reference to what happened at Greenwich and stuff like that in before.
Or the Dark.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. It kind of felt like, well, it doesn't necessarily feel like it was that connected. But then if we take whatever they're going to be doing in the Mandoverse, shall we say, with Mandalorian and stuff, and if they decide that however it's meant to culminate in some kind of big team-up event, and we move that onto the big screen, well, then suddenly it makes all the big difference. Speaking purely from Rogue Squadron, it would be fantastic to see how things kind of jump in and out, maybe following a couple of characters and start off happening, and you kind of get to know the characters next December in Rogue Squadron, but then, you know, follow those same characters. And I suppose that's the other thing. You've got to then get an actor to buy on to film and a TV production commitment, follow those characters on the TV streaming series, and then another couple of years' time, you get another film. But there does seem to be this issue, and you raise it about Star Trek, and it's not just Star Trek, but films do actually seem to be taking longer to get to the cinema. Obviously, I know we've had a blip with the pandemic, but for this to work, you would need the productions to be, you know, really geared up so that there's no massive delays. And, you know, so if you're going to do a film and then you're going to have a series that leads into another film, what you don't want is a film and a series having a 2 or 3 year gap because one of the actors is too busy doing another thing or has decided he doesn't want to return. That is a risk, but it would be great to see that kind of continuity, or maybe a bit like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where we're introduced to Coulson in Avengers Assemble, and then Coulson is pretty much the main character for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So then we, you know, we follow a lesser character and explore their world through the TV series. I would love to see actually like the Battle of Jakku. You could start with the formation of the Rogue Squadron just before Hoth. You could dance around the galaxy in the Galactic Civil War. You go to Endor, and then you also then get to see like the Battle of Jakku. And so you kind of see the last days of the Imperial Remnant. And so therefore you can also include stuff like The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, which is kind of 5-6 years after Return of the Jedi. It would tie everything in. It would just benefit everything. I will always prefer to see Star Wars on the big screen, but that's because I would prefer to watch everything on the big screen. But at the same time, you know, it's great that we're able to have the access to Star Wars on a more regular basis on the smaller screen, just because then obviously it's developing the story and creating new opportunities that we wouldn't have ordinarily have had.
Here's a thought for you. If Rogue One either came out later or Disney Plus had been around earlier, given what you've just said about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. playing off the back of Avengers Assemble, which is a great point, two things. One, I think Avengers Assemble was a great film, and I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have ended up being a Disney Plus show.
Yeah. Definitely.
Do you think then that Andor would have happened earlier? Do you think if Disney Plus had been an option, do you think then they would have just gone, right, Diego, we're going to go straight into Andor, we're going to tell this prequel story on Disney Plus? I wonder the status of Star Wars movies, because we've always thought of them in trilogies. I think a lot of fans look back now, look over the years, really, and look back and go, Revenge of the Sith is a damn perfect film. But you imagine if that had been two films. You look at Rise of Skywalker. That had so much ground to cover. That would have been better as a two-parter.
Yeah.
We are kind of hooked into the trilogy mindset for Star Wars. I just wonder whether or not big screen Star Wars almost, this is going to sound really weird, but because Disney Plus is so important and because you can tell so many more stories on television, I'm just thinking Rogue Squadron feels to me like a pilot episode for a Rogue Squadron TV series, because that always felt like it should be TV, not movie. Do you think we could ever get to a situation where they put out a Star Wars movie like Solo, so should have had a sequel, but will more likely have a series? Do you think we'll ever get to that? Or do you think you need a Star Wars trilogy? You need them to go, well, here's 10, 11 and 12, or we're doing a new Star Wars trilogy set in the Old Republic. Where do you think it sits now?
You're kind of right. In some respects, being tied into a trilogy, I think in some respects, I think it restricts the storytelling, if I'm honest.
You've got to have your empire in the middle, haven't you?
Yeah, everybody, you know, and of course, every director wants to have their empire moment, you know, and I think we kind of almost saw that with a sequel trilogy. There's nothing stopping them from saying, okay, well, let's do Rogue Squadron 1. And then I guess with new films, they will know when it starts to kind of get into the preview screen and once they're getting close to release and that, they'll start to have an idea whether or not they think it's going to be a good film and whether or not it's time to start those negotiations. But it might even end up being some kind of clause in some of the actors' contracts. You sign on to a Star Wars film, there's an option to do a TV series, and that TV series will be shot in the next 12 to 18 months after the film, for example. A bit like with Solo, the Solo cast, they were all tied into three film contracts, and that's only to allow the studios the option. Solo does like 1.2 billion plus and stuff like that, and then suddenly Ordinaric rights can like, yeah, but 25 grand that you pay me to do Solo, I think I probably, you know, want to stick another couple of zeros on the end of that, you know? So there's that. With Solo, you totally could have done that. You could have had the intro to the new Solo cast, as it were, on the big screen, make a cinematic event, and then have the ongoing adventures of Han Solo on Disney Plus. And where 10, 15, 20 years ago, before that, that would have been seen as a slight. I don't think you get that now. You look at the A-list heavyweight actors we're getting on streaming series, partly because there's so much more content, the production quality is up there and rivals that of cinema, but also it gives them more flexibility because it means that they can spend longer inhabiting a character. And if you can spend longer with a character, then you're going to get more nuance and it's not necessarily going to feel like a one-note character. So there's definitely pros to doing that. And like you said, you do use your cinematic release, your theatrical release, almost as a pilot, i.e. if it does over 700 million, let's say, worldwide, then we're going to get a series. But then also, I think ultimately, you don't necessarily want to completely fall into that way of thinking that everything needs to have a sequel. I think things that need sequels should have sequels. But if they are just a standalone one-off, let's just have it. And I don't see that as necessarily being a bad thing either. Some of the best Star Wars books and comics are one shots. They don't necessarily need to be a part of a trilogy. And obviously, like you said, even in books, and a lot of the stories are told over trilogies, and we need to consider, and we are with stuff like The High Republic, looking at ongoing stories rather than just trying to fit a whole new world of or style of storytelling into three books. And I think that is more exciting in the long run. Well, thank you very much, Tony, for that lovely and interesting question. I do appreciate it. Mark, can you let our good listeners know if they have an inkling or an itch or a burning desire, maybe need to get that looked at, but if it's about a question or comment or thought or theory, how can they get in touch?
If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free
It's a free app!
FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. Just like Tony did, just like our three listeners did last week and the three the week before. Well, I haven't just got three listeners. There's just three that sent questions in. But send in your questions. We'll answer them, as you can tell. We like doing that. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a five-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. And going forward, check out FanthaTracks Radio on Fridays, 7 o'clock UK time, for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, and Cannon Fodder. And I did it all in one breath. I'm done for this episode.
Well done. Take a deep, deep breath and relax. Thank you very much for listening. Everybody stay safe and take care. May the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's The Fantha from Down Under.
Ha ha!